You are now listening to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Daniel Lee, and followed by DLEE. So today we're going to be talking about, do you really need a photography website? Some news stories, and as always, what I have been up to. So, personal updates. No real shooting since the last time I went out and managed to stab myself in the leg, mainly due to weather. I was meant to go out the previous weekend, but just had so much on that I didn't really have the time. It's currently autumn here, or fall, depending on where you live, what you call it, but yeah, it's that time of year right here, so I, you know, want to go out, shoot some of the orange leaves, all that kind of stuff, but it's been raining a ton. Like today is actually very heavy rain earlier in the day. It's calmed down a bit this afternoon, but it's still very overcast. No real light, very bland at the moment. So I don't know if I will go out later to shoot. Maybe I'll just play more SimCity like I have been every single day. But otherwise, hopefully you get to shoot up more. I was meant to go to a zoo, sort of far out in the suburbs. I think it was not last week, the week before, after the podcast anyway. That's why I said I might be able to do the 100 to 400 review. But then I didn't end up going to that zoo because it was quite far from where I needed to go and I didn't have much time. And also it's school holidays, so I didn't really want to go there when there's kids running around everywhere and that kind of stuff. I would rather go during, you know, normal conditions when no one's there. So yeah, that didn't work out too well. One thing I do wish I had is more of a dedicated space to be able to make little props and that kind of stuff for when I want to shoot still life. I feel like, you know, say I wanted to make something out of paper. I don't know where I'm going to store it because our place is quite tiny, so I don't really have the space to store it. So having a dedicated photography room, you know, studio room, that would be amazing. But obviously, maybe in the future, everything's just, you know, a dream. I think if I could choose between the man cave with all my gaming set up, all that kind of stuff over that, I would go for that mainly because, you know, we'd use that a lot more. But either way, all in the future. I also find it interesting for those who are into gaming as well. I don't know if you're into city builders like SimCity, City Skylines. I've been obsessed with those again. And I just today realized the funny part of it. Because in photography, one of my main interests is cityscapes. And even in games, I like cities as well. I love building cities. So I just noticed it was kind of funny that both of those sort of say meet in both gaming and photography. The interests do align. And I'm just trying to read Petapixel a lot more. Or news articles and photography news articles and photography stuff in general. There's always so many good images to be seen. So many good articles out there about, you know, people's photography. I seen one today about, you know, photographing all the animals in Africa and that. Some of the images were absolutely amazing. That kind of stuff would be so much fun to do. Just, you know, win Lotto, retire and just do photography all day, every day and play games as well. Build cities. But yeah, that would be the dream. Otherwise, slow news week for me, and I think a slow news week in general, but we will get onto the news. So this first one, bit of a controversial topic, depending on, you know, what kind of stuff you're doing, but Elon Musk has bought Twitter. So this isn't exactly photography news, but I'm going to be doing it with from a photography standpoint, point of view. So, you know, unless you've been living under a rock, you've probably heard the news, and probably if you are living under one rock, you've likely still heard the news that Twitter has been sold. Maybe if you're living under 2.5 to 3 rocks, then maybe you didn't hear it. But otherwise, I think everything else, you'd still be able to hear it. So, you know, the news about this sale going down has been sort of more about the whole censorship and politics and all that kind of stuff. But I want to look at it just purely from a photography standpoint. Now, obviously, none of this has been sort of discussed in the terms of photography. It did sell for $44 billion. And, you know, Musk has been unhappy with the censorship on Twitter and he wants to do something about that. That's why he plans to, I believe, take it private because, you know, it's currently publicly traded. And once he takes it private, he won't really have to answer to anyone, so he could do what he wants with it. Because obviously, you know, publicly traded companies like WWE, you know, another one I love, they're sort of subject, you know, if something happens, for example, you know, a wrestler got fired not too long ago because he had photos of him come out from when he was younger posing, you know, like Hitler kind of thing with the Hitler shaved mustache. So because of that, he got fired, you know, mainly because it's a public traded company. So that limits what they can post, what they can do. Now, in terms of photography, I'd say in the past year, we've got a lot of upgrades for photographers on Twitter, which has been amazing. You know, it went from tiny photos, low resolution now, not everyone may see this. I only see it in one of my accounts, but you get the full width photos. They come across the whole width of your screen. On mobile, this is. The image resolution has been increased. Just they made so many great positive changes to photographers. And I know on my Photos by DLEE Twitter, my photography one, I've seen more people say that, you know, they swapped over from IG to Twitter for that better experience and less of a, you know, like for like kind of culture and all that kind of stuff that IG is accustomed to. Plus, you know, IG is focusing more on shopping and videos, trying to get as much information out of people as they can to sell it to those marketers, you know? Not to say that Twitter or any other social media doesn't do that. I just personally think that, you know, Instagram and Facebook are the most biggest evils. Anything owned by Zuckerberg is the biggest evil out there. Now, I am not 100% on the timeline, but I believe sometime after the previous, I think CEO or creator Jack Dorsey, or I can't remember his name, Jack something like that, I think, stepped down is when they banned street photography. They made it, not so much street photography exactly, but they made it so you weren't allowed to upload photos of other people without their consent, you know, because obviously there's laws around that. Depending, I believe here in Australia, I know it's different everywhere. If you photograph someone in the public space, then, you know, it's a decent photo kind of thing, obviously not like upskirts or something. But if you know, normal photo, people walking down the street, fully clothed, no weird angles, that kind of stuff, just a normal street photo, that's perfectly legal to do. I believe if they do express, you know, concern about it to you, you legally have to delete the photo, which is fair as well. But they would sort of seem to have banned it for anything unless you could legally prove the person's consent. Now, this obviously affects street photography and there was a big discussion about it there. I know there was a lot of theories that, you know, the reason why they got rid of this is because people were photographing celebrities or politicians doing the wrong thing and getting caught, mainly the politicians part. This is what I've read, you know, anyway, this is not fact, not my opinion. This is what I'm just saying, hearsay kind of thing. But because of that, that's why they got rid of that. So in theory, if, you know, Musk wants to remove censorship and lets people speak freely on there, obviously there's negative sides to that, which I'm not going to get into politics of it. I'm not even a political person here in Australia. We're not like that big on it, I feel like, anyway. But I just see it. Hopefully that means they may reverse that decision and you can upload street photography without that worry as well. Obviously, you don't want perverts putting their, you know, like I said, upskirts or any of that kind of stuff on there. But it's more about being able to actually, you know, you capture a great street moment. You know, you technically say hypothetically, you're out in the city doing street photography. And then there's a guy proposing in the middle of, you know, the street somewhere. If you take a photo of that, it just there shows their face, even though it's nothing bad. Some guys, you know, you could always spin it to say bad. Maybe he's got a wife on the side and kids at home who think he's out at work and he's proposing. You know, you could spin it anyway, but hype, let's assume they're both single, both consenting, propose. You know, technically you can upload that because of that rule. So this could be something good for photographers. And I know he did mention that he may add an edit button. He thinks tweets you should be able to edit, which is definitely true. The amount of times I have typos or autocorrect has screwed something up, so I have to quickly delete the tweet and re-add it again with the correct thing is a hassle. So that would be really good to have that edit button. So if these changes benefit photographers even more, I think that would be really great, especially with, you know, Instagram, like I mentioned, caring more about video. And I did read, you know, a while back that the government was considering trying to force Facebook to sell Instagram. If that happened, I may actually go back to Instagram, but I don't think it will happen. Who knows? Either way, that platform I feel like is dead for photos. Not dead, but you know, it's not the best platform for photos. I honestly don't think there is a platform that is the best for photographers. Each has their own sort of benefit. Instagram obviously being the most users, social. So, you know, there is a chance more people can see your photos. Flickr having more control of your photos, better, much better quality. You can post whatever you want. So the photographers who shoot like boudoir, nude, I'll just say nudes. The photographers who do nude photography, that's the easiest way to say it. They can post whatever they want on Flickr, whereas they can't on, you know, Instagram, have to blur certain parts out or not show them all together. But it all really depends what happens in the future. Hopefully a site like, you know, 500px came out of nowhere and took over. Hopefully that does happen again with some new website. Next on the news, another lens announcement. This one's for the Nikon Z mount. So Casina announces the Voigtlander APO Lanfar 50mm f2 as spherical lens, which, as I mentioned, for Z mount cameras. While its name and basic specifications match the Voigtlander same lens for Sony E-mount. Cassina says this new Nikon Z mount version is all new while retaining the same high performance thanks to an apochromatic design. This lens is constructed in 10 elements and 11 groups, including two low dispersion elements, two double-sided aspherical elements, and a floating element. The 12 aperture blades with a range of f2 to f16. It has a minimum focusing distance of 45 centimeters, 52 millimeter filter thread, has manual focus, and is set to be released in May of 2022, which is literally a few days, one day away? I think there's 30 days in April. And for a price of $987. Now, the sample photos in this article do look pretty nice. The first one, if you look at it from like a Ferris wheel, the actual image is really nice, really appealing. When I, viewed it larger, it didn't look that sharp to me. It is a manual focus lens, so that could be why. You know, they just missed that focus that slightest bit. With peaking on a mirrorless camera, and something that's not really, it does move, but it's static at the same time, should be in focus. But all the other images look quite nice to me. Rendering look good, sharpness look quite decent. Price is a bit high for a manual lens for my liking, especially for an F2, but I'm sure there'll be a market out there for people who want a lens like this. Also, curiously, if you notice the way I read the news, it's a bit better flow to it compared to, really early episodes. What I used to do is I used to have the news article open and I would just simply look for the specs and read it like that. So I'd always be like, 52 millimeters, yep, manual for, like, now I actually spend quite a bit of time writing a proper script for it. And that way I have all the specs there ready to go and can just read it all at once. So that's, if you're curious why it would sound different to older, that's why. I thought I'd just share that anyway. Next up, the Sony FE24-70mm f2.8 GM2 lens has been announced. So Sony are continuing to make Mark II versions of their existing lenses. Obviously, their lenses have come a long way since their original Mark I's. So, it's a good thing to be upgrading them. This is no different, being a second generation lens. Now, this lens does feature an all-new optical construction that consists of 20 elements in 15 groups, including 5 aspherical elements, 2 of which are high-precision extreme aspherical XA elements, 2 extra low-dispersion elements, and 2 super extra low-dispersion elements. This lens features internal focusing with 4 XD linear motors. Now, this lens is pretty small, so I often wonder how big these autofocus motors are. They must honestly be tiny considering you can fit 4 of them in a relatively small lens. But those XD linear motors are really good. Silent, super fast, super accurate. I wish Canon would use, they have their Nano USM, which I personally think are just as good, just as fast, very silent. But sadly, you don't get them in that as many lenses, especially lower end ones like all the ones I own. So other features include an updated lens hood with an opening for controlling of variable filters, an F11 bladed aperture diaphragm compared to 9 in its predecessor. So obviously the more aperture blades, often the more rounder your bokeh is going to be. Ones like the 85GM, that one has 11 compared to a lot of the other 85s, which has only 9. And I personally can see the difference. It's very, very round. The bowls are perfectly round. Not perfectly, but they're really, really nice. Whereas you get very cat-eyed shape on some other lenses. You get improved dust and moisture resistance and a fluorine coating, if you need to brush your teeth, on the front element to repel water, oil, and other debris. It features a minimum focusing distance of 21 centimeters and 30 centimeters at 24 and 70 millimeters respectively. So a pretty good minimum focusing distance as well, not too much different between the long and the wide end. It weighs only 693 grams, which is very, very impressive considering, the build still looks really good. And it'll be available in June 2022 for $2,300. Obviously not an expensive lens, but this is a G Master lens. It's the equivalent to an L. And I don't know what the Nikon version is. I think for the Z mount, there's an S or Nikkor for their old DSLR ones. But this is their high-end 24-70 f2.8. It's not going to be cheap, but 695 grams is extremely impressive. Even though I don't shoot anymore, I really respect and really love how they actually focus on the size and the weight of their lenses. But they don't really seem to compromise in image quality or anything else like that, or autofocus. So, they're really killing it with their lenses. I have to say that. And I would be a liar to say I'm not like, I wish I could own a Sony body as well. I even looked into it, how feasible it would be to get a second body as a Sony just, to have like the 85 or maybe something else, but it's not feasible, sadly. mainly because, as I mentioned before, I did want to sell my M50 and get something else, and I do want it to be full frame. Still deciding what that second body would be. Most likely just going to be another Canon body once they replace the RP with another, that rumored sub $1,000 entry level body. But until then, obviously, we don't know what it will have. I kind of want IBIS as a must and has to have a fully articulating screen. So, you know, don't really have many options at the moment. It'd be just, yeah, pretty much nothing. Photos and videos from this lens look really good. All the YouTubers did their preview videos and reviews for it already, so those are very easy to look up and find. I really need to start going back to doing the lens release video posts on TPE, so if anyone wants to see them, they can find them all in a short and easy to find area. But until then, yeah, it'll be the way it is. Otherwise, I didn't feel like there was that much news. There was, you know, quite a few opinion pieces that I found quite interesting. That's why I mentioned checking out sites like Petapixel. There was one on, you know, why 24 megapixel is the best resolution to have still, those kind of ones. But otherwise, that's it for the news. So now we're on to the main topic. So do you need a photography website? That is probably something that many people consider at some point or time in their photography journey, that, you know, do I want somewhere dedicated to put my photos? Do I want, you know, something to be able to show my clients? Depending on what you do in photography, whether it's just as a hobbyist like me, or if you do professional work, you may want, you know, somewhere where you can do blog posts, write about where you've been, what photos you took, that kind of stuff. There's so many uses for a photography website. For me personally, obviously TPE, I like to write tutorials, I like to do this podcast, so I made a dedicated website for that. Otherwise, I have my actual normal photography blog. I like to post my websites on there and I like to write. It's funny because, you know, in uni, you hate writing, I hate doing assignments, but since finishing uni, I feel like I need to keep writing just to keep my brain working at its best and keep active. I do write for my job, but I, you know, the notes I write aren't like a proper article, that kind of stuff. I like to maintain that habit. So that's why I do like to write blog posts. And in case you didn't know, well, if you write blog posts, it actually does help your SEO as well, help people find your website, which, you know, writing blog posts and that isn't possible on Instagram, that kind of stuff. You may think, you know, even a blog site like Tumblr, although it can do a lot of stuff, people don't generally view your actual blog. They'll only look at their dashboard, at their feed, like you would on Instagram. So you get pretty bad SEO, or technically non-existent SEO pretty much. And, you know, individual posts, people won't be able to find them when searching through Google like they could if they were doing, you know, an actual website. Now, before I get further into this, I just want to remind everyone, I do not have any sponsors. There are no affiliate links. I do not get any money from this. All the people or websites I mentioned are just popular ones or ones that I've used personally. So not depending on what you use is up to you. Obviously, I'm not getting money for this. Not fully recommending anyone. Just telling you what my personal preferences are, what I use. So yeah. Now, depending on which you choose to use is, you know, can depend on what functionality you get, what reach you get, and what cost. Some being free and some being quite pricey over time, especially if you're doing it just as a hobby. What I'll do as usual, I'll just discuss a few with some benefits and some negatives of each. So the first and most simplest one to obviously mention would be social media. So your sites like Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. For me personally, I don't think these are great to use solely. So the whole point of social media to me is to just draw users to a website, not to be your main site. Now, you'll always see people say, you know, the YouTubers, like when they're doing their promos and that kind of stuff for selling you Squarespace and that, they'll say, you know, your social media, your Instagram, Facebook, whatever, could be gone tomorrow, which it honestly is the truth. You don't control that platform. Even if the platform doesn't disappear, they could delete your account for any reason. Someone could do a fake copyright strike against you. Your account's deleted. That's it. You got to start again, which, you know, would obviously be a hassle. Technically, nothing is safe ever, but a personal website's more safer than social media. But at the same time, the biggest benefit for social media, it is free. So that's, you know, something you can't really overlook. If you're just doing it as a hobby, you post very casually, you don't care, social media could be the best for you. Obviously, you know, reach-wise, it can be good, it can be bad. So you're obviously competing with the algorithm, whatever platform you use. I haven't used Facebook in a long time and I never will. I haven't used it since 2012. I haven't used it in a decade. So I don't know what it's like in terms of their feed, whether they do chronological or curated feeds. But, you know, say for something like Instagram, they finally brought back a chronological feed. Twitter's always had chronological feed as far as I'm aware. Those kind of sites, you're going to be able to reach the people that follow you. But depending on what people use, if people don't know about this and just use the curated feeds, they're never going to know about your stuff. So they may never be able to find you. And, you know, sometimes as well, especially with social media, SEO can be quite bad. So if you know what SEO is, search engine optimization. So when someone searches, you know, New York photographer, Sydney photographer, that kind of stuff, it's what shows up in the Google rankings, the search engine optimization. So your profile may show up for, say, like an Instagram, if you have that, it may show up in Google. But where the issue comes in is, for example, if I want to look at someone's Instagram or someone's Facebook, a business Instagram or a business Facebook, especially with Facebook, I can only view it if I have an account, which I don't. And more people don't have these accounts for Instagram and Facebook. A lot of people quit it. Facebook especially, it's like a aging platform, I'd say. You know, younger people supposedly only use TikTok, Snapchat, that kind of stuff. They don't actually bother with Facebook. So you having it on there means potentially there is a group of people that can't view your social media or your portfolio. Obviously, you know, that may not matter to you, but that will matter to some. So that could be a very big thing. And if you're doing paid work, social media, you know, people can reach out to you there. But I honestly feel that, you know, you should use your social media to direct traffic elsewhere. So that is sort of social media. Now, the next up I would talk about is website builders like Squarespace and Wix. So they're the two that really come to mind. You know, you see the ads for them everywhere, the two major ones. This is probably one of the most popular option if people do want to go paid, mainly for the fact that is they're seen as being, you know, that's what their market is, being very easy to set up, easy to use. They do everything for you. Just pick a template and you're ready to go. They are definitely more pricey. So when you look at it, the two aspects to a website, you have the domain, the website address, you know, like thephotographerenthusiast.com, and you have the actual hosting. So where the website is hosted, you know, which is generally just some computer server there, which is loading your website for everyone that wants to visit it. Now, the domains, that can vary really. You can get domains that have thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars, and you get one for a few dollars as well. So it depends on what website address you want. Like the Photography Enthusiast, that one, for example, was, I think, only like 15 bucks, 12 bucks when I bought it. Whereas if I want photoenthusiast.com, that one was several thousand dollars, which I wasn't going to pay for something that's a hobby, you know? So those price depending. Now, with the hosting of Wix and Squarespace, the cheapest you're going to get with Wix is $13.50, which does have limitations on storage, which, you know, I think Wix was 5 gigabyte storage, which sounds like a lot, but depending on, you know, over time, how long you want to keep it, it could seem small, at 13 a month especially. And then Squarespace being around 16 AUD a month, but Squarespace does come with a free domain. Whether or not you should do that, use that is another questionable thing, which I can explain more. The general consensus is wherever you have your website hosted, you should have your domain somewhere else. If you have them both in the same place and you want to take one, so say, you know, your hosting, for example, was with Squarespace, you have the website there, but your domain is through GoDaddy. So you want to leave Squarespace, it's okay. You can just leave. They can't really hold your stuff ransom because it's in somewhere else. And vice versa goes for the domain. But if you have both there, they could hold your domain there and hold it ransom so you can't take it away. This may not happen with Squarespace, obviously, but it's something that could potentially happen. That's why most people recommend having them somewhere else. And then, you know, if you're less tech savvy, this may seem like the better option for you, in your mind anyway. I say that because I personally think the next one isn't that hard to set up, but I know it's very popular, Squarespace. It's just more for me, the price per month, like if you pay 12 months in advance, it's 16 AUD a month works out to. Whereas if you're doing it the other way, can work out a lot pricier. From what I know, the cheapest plan is a shared hosting plan. So it works a lot like WordPress. So with shared hosting, what that is you're sharing a hard drive space with other people, with a website. Think of it like a house. Rather than you living in that house by yourself, someone else is living in the house with you. Now, when they want to call you, you're talking to them. The other person is on the call trying to talk too. So it's sharing resources. It's loud, if you get what I mean. So that's why shared hosting can be a bit slower. So it is a bit pricey, in my opinion, for shared hosting. You can often get a VPS, like a virtual privacy server, I think it stands for, from other hosts for that price, which, you know, you can configure everything yourself. You can get your own dedicated space, I believe, for those. Pricing wise, I personally don't think it's the best. which leads me to the last one. It's a little bit of bias here. I do think it is the best, but WordPress. So this is my personal favorite, mainly because the freedom you get, the price you get, and I personally think it's quite easy to use. So now with this, this could be very, very cheap or it could be very, very expensive because literally it's so customizable on what you want and what you can do with it. So domains, as I mentioned, for a domain, you could get it as cheap as $2 a year for a few years when you first sign up. So say hypothetically, I get one on sale, they do a sale, $2 for my domain for 2 years. So that's $4, you know, for 2 years, or we'll just say $2 a year. Then if I sign up for somewhere like Bluehost, which is a popular hosting, which I'll get more into in a moment, when you initially sign up, they'll charge you $2.95 a month, which comes with a free domain. And, you know, so if you do a $2.95 a month, it's like $30-something for 12 months, somewhere around there. So what you pay for a year with Bluehost and WordPress would literally be the equivalent of a few months with Squarespace or Wix, and you have way more customization. So generally, when you sign up for a host with WordPress, most of them now will help you set up WordPress, and a lot of them have one-click install, so you literally just state install WordPress, that's it. They get you enter the website name that you want to call it, and that is it. It is literally that easy. Then all you have to do is just you go into, you know, plugins or themes, display appearance and themes, and then pick a theme or like how your website's going to be displayed. It's very, very, very easy. And there's always support can help you with this kind of stuff. Now you got themes that are free of charge, like your 2021, 2022. These ones are usually released by WordPress. They're like the stock themes. Otherwise, you can get paid themes. So I actually use a paid theme on the Photography Enthusiast. You just pay a one-off fee. That's it. You got the lifetime license for it. You usually get a limited amount of support as well, like 6 months support or something. They can make your website look completely different, come with support for different plugins. You know, depending on, for example, if you use one of those basic 2022 themes and you add a video, it'll act different compared to a premium theme. If I add a video as my featured image, so when you go on a website, you know, say Petapixel, the very top image at the top of the page is usually called a featured image. So on my website, I can make a video the featured image. I could have a photo show on the thumbnail for that. Once they click on the actual post, it switches to the video and I can play the video from there or play it from the preview. There's so many different options you can do with WordPress, so much customization. Well, obviously a paid theme is going to cost you more. I think it was like $60 to get that paid theme, but it was worth every cent. I absolutely love that theme. I personally find that WordPress isn't that hard to set up. As I mentioned, host support, the hosts have always helped me so much. With DreamHost, I've asked so many questions, I've had so many issues, but they've always managed to fix it without issue. You have your one-click installs, and just using WordPress in general is very, very easy. You got your sidebar. It couldn't be any more obvious. Just like posts, you know, appearance, that kind of stuff. Everything is very easy to use, very easy to customize. And then when it comes to actually making posts, you can, with the block editor, now some people don't like this who are used to the old style WordPress. My friend Joey, Singapore, he definitely doesn't like the block editor. You can ask him. But I, you know, for people like me who don't know coding, it makes it very, very easy. I feel like my articles, if you look at my blog posts as well, sometimes I'll have four images, like a small gallery, then the text, a lot of, in my reviews, the whole star rating that I've added to the reviews and the what I like, what I don't like, I would not have a clue how to do that with code. I only know how to do that because of the block editor. It makes it a lot more user-friendly. It become that easier. I didn't like it at first because it was so limited with what features it has. But, you know, over the years, they've really expanded it. There's so much more you can do with it. So I really like it, and it makes it so much easier to do. And then as from a photography standpoint, you can create your galleries. Like for on my Photos by DOEE, if you look at my portfolio page, I have a gallery there. What I've done is I've bought this plugin called Justified Featured Images, or Justified Images, or something like Justified Image Grid. You can make your own sort of portfolio from there and just add images, upload them in multiple formats. So JPEG is obviously what most people use. WebP, W-E-B-P, is one of the absolute best formats to use for a website if you're setting up a photography website. I don't know if Squarespace support WebP, but WordPress does. Pretty much what it is it's more of like a compressed image, but it's not really lossless like a JPEG, and the file size is so much smaller. So I've had images that are say 1 to 2 megabyte, you know, could be 2 megabyte, whereas as a JPEG, very low resolution, 1600 pixels wide, whereas as a WebP, I have 2560 px wide, and it's only 700 kilobytes. That's why, if you'll notice, if you look very far back on photos by DLEE, the images don't look that great now because they're a lot smaller in a JPEGs, whereas both on TPE and on photos by DLEE, I use WebP images. So that way I can have much larger images, much smaller file sizes, which obviously it's win-win for me. But yeah, with that, even with that gallery plugin I use, I can actually create Flickr albums and then use those as my galleries, which is pretty much what I do. And you can obviously have it display the Flickr stuff, or you can have that hidden. It's purely up to you. You can customize it in so much ways. I just personally love WordPress customization, price. I personally think usability is very easy as well in this modern day. Maybe back a long time ago when I first started using it, wasn't as user-friendly, but in this day and age, it definitely is. So if you are doing it very, very, very casually, you don't do any paid work, you just literally want to post the occasional photo, social media is probably honestly your best bet. But if you do paid work, you don't mind, you know, maybe learning a tiny bit just how to use that user interface, which you learn with Squarespace, but you want something cheaper to run your website, maybe write blog posts from time to time, especially if you're doing paid work, you should be writing blog posts because it helps your SEO. Then to me, WordPress is the absolute best way to go. But hopefully, if there's anyone out there that wants to know more about, you know, decisions on photography, websites, comparing stuff, maybe just some more insight from me on which one is best, please let me know. I'd be happy to discuss it with you. Reach out to me on Twitter. I'm at Photos by DLEE or Mr. Meowpuss as well. You can reach me at thephotographyenthusiast.com, which you'll find all the show notes for this, all links, which is also in the show notes, or any previous reviews, episodes, that kind of stuff. And yeah, if you want to follow me personally for my photography, Flickr is where I post, well, technically Photos by DLEE, my blog is where I post the absolute most, then Flickr, which is linked on there, and my Twitter, Photos by DLEE, which I don't post that much, to be honest. I don't use Twitter for my photography as much. I mostly use it to go on about wrestling and video games, which is on my other account. Otherwise, thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to subscribe and see you back in 2 weeks. Thank you.